Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's blah, blah, blah. Anyway, today is a special episode. It's not just me on this episode. I've got my girlfriend here, Juliana. Say hi, Juliana.
Hello.
And it's a special episode because it is episode number 200. Woohoo!
Yay!
Many years into doing this and I've got to episode number 200. So we're going to be sharing, or I'm going to be sharing different lists, top 10 lists, top 5 lists and things like that. I asked around on previous podcasts and people emailed in different messages and said what they want to have for a top, for the episode number 200, because it's a round number, might as well make it something slightly different than normal. And some people wanted, you know, an author profile. Someone wanted something to do with Ian M. Banks because he died recently. Other people just wanted a normal episode. But a few people mentioned, hey, what you should do is share your top 10 books of all time or your top 5 books of all time. And in the end, I decided to get other people to share different top 5 lists on Goodreads.com on the SFBRP listeners page there. So there was about 150. I think we just counted up 150 different. Responses in total on these different threads, and there's some really great ideas, so that's what I'm going to be doing. But first of all, just a little bit about the podcast. I've been doing this since 2008, 200 episodes, and I just looked up here on iTunes, and there's a folder here which says there is 6.3 days worth of episodes here. And of course I've done more than 200 episodes already, because there's quite a few special episodes or one-off episodes, and I've read many more than 200 books, because I didn't review a lot of books that I've read for various reasons. Some at the beginning I wouldn't review fantasy novels in the SFBRP, you know, I read 6 or 7 in the first year and didn't actually give them their own episodes. And other times I've done quite a lot of books with the SFF audio podcast, and I've read those books and discussed them elsewhere, and they didn't make it. They probably made it into the podcast feed, but they're not SFBRP episodes themselves. But I still get emails from people saying, hey, I've listened to every single one of the podcasts so far, all the way through. And it always amazes me that people listen to that much. Of course, I do. I listen to other podcasts and go back through, right, start at the beginning or listen back through. But it always surprises me, because I just got one a few days ago where someone said, I listened to you on Stitcher Radio, which I think is like this podcast kind of service, which it makes radio stations based on what you listen to and you say what you like.
Like Last FM?
Yeah, kind of Last FM, but for podcasts, I think. Oh, okay. I'm not entirely sure how it works. And they put adverts in between the podcasts to fund it or something like that. I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, he went back to the beginning and listen to all of them in order. Most people don't do that. They listen to the books that they've read already. Like, you've listened to a few podcast episodes, yeah?
I try to, when I first met you, I also listened to your podcast. And if I would do the whole podcast, I also would just listen to it in order. Because, the way I would do it,
yeah,
to get all of them. And
but you're not interested in listening to all of them.
It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it does.
And also, don't have so much time.
And also, you have me next to you. So if you go, what do you think about, you know, this
book? About this book.
Yeah, I remember.
Would you recommend it?
I remember on our first ever date that we went on together, you were saying, oh, I'm reading a book at the moment and it's about someone who dies and leaves behind a computer program. And I'm like, oh, that's Demon, however it's pronounced, by Daniel Suarez. And it was funny. I was like, yeah, okay, you can read the first third of that book and then just don't read anymore. And of course, you finished it off and you were like, oh, I wish I hadn't read the last two thirds of that book.
And then I thought, oh, well, I'd just give it a go for the second one. And then I thought, well, where's the end? Yeah. Where's the end? I want an end.
Anyway, but it was very funny that on our first date, we were discussing science fiction novels on our first date, which is probably why we're together 2.5 years later, or over two years later. So that's why, of course, Juliana's on this episode with me, because while I kind of presume, I can't presume that people have listened to all of the episodes when I discuss some books later. So, you know, it's good to have someone who can just say, hey, what about this book? Or what about that book? Or what do you think of this? That's going to be Juliana's job. And also to share some of her favourite top fives or top books as well, throw in some suggestions as well. What else was I going to say? Oh yeah, we were just mentioning before, it was a bit weird that we just went for a walk before recording this podcast, because it's Saturday afternoon and we're hanging out here in the garden of Juliana's parents' house out in the country. It's very nice. We went for a walk, and on the walk we were discussing, okay, what are we going to discuss on this podcast? What are we going to do? Because I've already kind of worked out the top 5 lists, and you said, well, I listened back to the very first episode of the SFBRP. And it's like a 10-minute episode, and I've not listened to it for a while, but I pretty much, like, all of the plans that I had for the SFBRP you know, back like 5.5 years ago in the beginning of 2008, pretty much kind of stayed constant and they worked, you know. Some of the things that I wanted to do is like get good book suggestions, which has been really handy. I've got lots of really good book suggestions, and also to keep track of what I've been reading, because this is before like 2008. Maybe Goodreads was around, but there wasn't very good ways of keeping track of what you read so far and what you thought of it.
Except like a bookshelf with the books.
Yes, of course. But I never have. No,
you don't have that.
No, I haven't had a bookshelf with books in it for, you know, 15 years or something like that. You know, with moving around, I just never really kept hold of books. I always just like, you know, gave them away and traded them in, you know, secondhand bookshops and things like that. So I never really had a big collection of books to see what I've read. So yeah, having the SFBRP was literally. Because I think it was like the third time I started Absolution Gap by Alistair Reynolds, because all of his books had the similar kind of front covers on them. You know, there's like a planet with a spaceship in front of them. And for a while, it's like a planet with a spaceship. And I picked up this book. And I was like, oh, is this a new one? I don't recognize the name or stuff like that. And I started reading it. It's like, I've done this before. I've done this. Like, I read the book and then I picked it up and started reading the first chapter. Didn't recognize the first chapter. Got into the prologue. Didn't recognize the prologue. Then started the first chapter. And I was like, I know this book. And then I put it away. And then I did it again the second time. I was like, really? I think I actually read it through a second time later on. Oh, I think I read more of it and then was like, okay, I don't need to read this book again. I can't remember. I can definitely remember starting that book three times just because I hadn't kept track. So
that
now
happened to me as well before. Yeah. Especially when like publishers, they publish a book or a book series, and some years later they decide to publish the same series again with different titles.
Yeah, or different covers and different omnibus collections and things.
And every time I think, oh, is this a new book of this author? I just get it. And then I realize, this sounds familiar. What's going on? Oh, no, I read this under a different name.
So that was another reason why I started it. And also, I just, of course, one of the most important things is that I just like talking about science fiction and of course, most of the time I was talking about it by myself, and I have had some guests on. You know, I've done, like say, with different podcasts, talking about science fiction on different podcasts, like the SFF Audio podcast, which is, you know, more frequently doing stuff with Jesse and Tamahomi and Scott and Julie and the guys from there. But yeah, anyway, so it's a bit weird. The only thing that is really different from what I first started off is I thought all of these episodes were going to last between like 10 and 20 minutes long each. You know, when I first did the tests, I was like, can I say everything that I wanted to say about this? And be like, for the like 4 or 5 months before I started the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, I would variously like finish reading a book and go, oh, let me just talk about this book and just have like just as a test recording. And so I did, and I managed to say everything that I wanted to say sometimes in like 10 minutes. And there was another podcast called Books You Should Read by another podcast network. And they had the Movies You Should See podcast. And then they said, well, we want to do a books one. And the books one is going to be a listener contribution show. So other people would do book reviews as podcast episodes and put it out. And I was like, oh, this will be a good test for me. So I did a review of Ender's Game and put it out, and they used it as their first episode on that podcast. And I was that's pretty good.
Nice.
And that only lasted 20 minutes. And I was thinking, oh, 20 minutes, you know, that's like Ender's Game is a really good book. You know, it's a good way into science fiction. I think we'll talk about that later on as well. So yeah, it was just one of those things where I was like, yeah, 20 minutes to talk about a book. And now, if it's a book which I don't have a lot to say about, I'll finish it up in like 30 minutes or 35, 40 minutes. And this is what we're just talking about when we went for a walk. Like why do some books take longer to review? If it's a really good book, especially if there's two people talking about a really good book, you can have a lot of stuff to say, especially if it's a big book. And, you know, that can last like, you know, over an hour. You know, these episodes can last an hour and a half and stuff. And if a book is really bad, you can really rant against it and you can share all the stuff that you really didn't like about it. But if a book is sort of like, okay, but there's nothing really bad about it or nothing really good about it,
you can do it in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I can do it in 20 minutes or something. It's just like, yeah, this is good. It's well written. It's got a nice story, good characters, nothing special. But, you know, this is what I want to talk about. This is what it made me think about. But yeah, there's not a lot of other stuff. Whereas like a book like by Tobias S. Buchel, Arctic Rising, there's like the characters were great, the story was mostly really good, the vision of the future was really interesting, the whole world was something I'd not really seen before, set around the North Pole. It was like a near future or kind of mid near future, like in 40 years when there's no polar ice caps anymore, and they're having to keep polar ice caps artificially frozen just to keep ice bears. What do you call them? Polar bears. It's because I was looking at the picture on the front of this newspaper. There's a polar bear diving into the Berlin Zoo. Was just on the front page
in
news.
German, they're called ice bears.
Yeah, ice bears. Yeah. So anyway, getting confused about that. But the writing was some of the worst writing of any book, and I gave it like 3.5 stars or 3 stars, 3.5 stars in the end. But there was so much that I wanted to talk about, which was good, and so much that I wanted to talk about was bad, and I really needed to get praise, fit the praise in and the ranting in. So it was like a podcast of two halves. So anyway, I think, what else did I want to say about these reviewing books?
Does it happen often that you read a book and you think, oh, it's good, it's okay, it's a nice book to read, and then you do the podcast and you think, oh well, I have loads more bad things to say than good things?
The thing that happens is I'll review a book and actually like give it quite a low rating, and then when I think back about the book and I look back at the rating I gave it, I'm just like, why did I give that book such a low rating? There's a book, Eiffelheim, which is like the go-to example of this. When I think back, I remember really enjoying that book, but it took me ages to complete because I really hated it at the time, because there was like these two, there was some stuff set in like medieval Germany, with aliens turn up in medieval Germany in a small village called Eiffelheim. And then there's stuff set in the modern day, and it's just, the stuff set in the modern day is so shit and completely spoils what was happening in the past. But the stuff in the past is really good. But as a novel, it's really, really shit. But as, if you just take those bits of the novel set in the past, it's really good, except it doesn't really work completely because you need, yeah, it's just one of those things that I remember all of the good stuff I enjoyed it. And it's like the Blade itself by Joe Abercrombie, which I just reviewed the follow-up to that book. I was like, oh, I remember really enjoying this book. And then, you know, I looked back at some of the notes that I made when I recorded the previous podcast. I was like, oh yeah, the same things that I dislike about the follow-up book, I really even more disliked about the first book in the series. So I think what actually happens is I'll read a book, hate it, and then the things that I didn't like about the book, I'll forget about those over time, because those won't be the things that I forget. There is a few books that I've read and reviewed quite badly, which and then other people have emailed in and said, oh, but what about this? Why do you not look at it in this way? Why do you think about that? And I might have been a bit unfair in my bad ratings, but I think, you know, the ratings that I do is based almost entirely on like enjoyment of the book when I was reading it then. You know, if I read the book in the past and really enjoyed it, and then I read it again, and it's more of a disappointment the second time I read it, it can be a big drop-off. You know what I mean? I can, I remember a book being really great, and then going back to it, and because it's a lot worse than I remembered, I give it a lower rating, even if it's not actually that bad of a book. But when I read it when I was 15 years old, and then come back and read it when I'm 30 years old, 30-year-old me is disappointed that it doesn't hold up, if you understand.
And very often it's way more entertaining to listen to you when you do like a rant about something. Like I was there when you finished reading on a Harrington Bethlehem station.
You and listened to me record that podcast, did you?
You talked to me beforehand and that podcast, and it was just, I had so much fun listening to your like...
But no, because I actually read you some of the sentences.
Exactly.
And
I thought, like, no, this can't be so bad. And then...
Have you read it?
No, but you read out the sentence, and it was just like, I could not understand how you can even write a sentence like
just
that.
Just imagine the Vor game from the Vor Kosigan saga, but everything just way worse. Everything that you didn't like about the Vor game, just multiply all of that by loads, and everything that you did like about the Vor game, and you know, what was the other one? Oh, the Warrior's Apprentice and yes. The Vor game. Everything that you didn't like about them, multiply all the bad stuff and then and remove all the good stuff.
Anyway, I think in your podcast, it's actually a lot nicer to listen to episodes where you really get into it and you're just like, wow, and this, and again, and this, and then that.
No, but
way more entertaining than a book where you said, oh yeah, it's good, it's okay, yeah. I like it. Well,
but I was looking at the ratings of the books, you know, that I have. If you go to sfbrp.com/episode-lists or episode, what is it, episode-lists. Anyway, there's a link right there on sfbrp.com. You can look through and you can see the ratings of the books that I've done. You know, between 0 and 1 stars, there's only like 5 books. There's like 5 books that are 1 stars. You know, going all the way up to like 2 stars, there's actually, oh, I think I made a spreadsheet, but there's only a few, like most books, or the majority of books, or what would you call the middle the different averages, the averages of the books, it's going to be around about three and a half stars.
3.5 is a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot, because that for me is an average book that I liked and would just be like, yeah, you should read that. Yeah, of course. You know, is going to be a 3.5-star book. You know, if a book is like average enough for me to go, yeah, it's part good, it's part bad. Oh, you might enjoy it, you might not. You know, is going to be a 2.5-star book. Where if it's like good enough to recommend to anyone, it'd be a 3.5-star book. And then a 4-star book is like a really good book. And then 4.5 is like a really, really good book. And a 5-star book, you know, you see here, like there's 4 books which I've given 4.9 stars to, and 5 books that I've given 5 stars to, you know. But even then, I wouldn't be able to recommend all of them to everybody.
Yeah, you know, it's because very special.
Because then it's very personal.
Special interests also.
Anything that's 3.5-star to 4-star is a book which is kind of generally good enough to recommend to anyone, even though some of the books which I think are 5-star books or, you know, 4.5-star books, some people would read them and go, oh, that's only 2 stars. Why are you holding that up? Anyway, I think we should actually, because we talked quite a lot about that now, I don't think there's much else we want to do. We're 15 minutes in. Let's get to some of these top lists. I picked out some top lists that I wanted to share. Like some people said, oh, top 10 books and top 5 books. I've got 2 top 10 books. The first one is going to be the top 10 books of all time that I read before starting the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, and I still think are the science fiction classics. And I want this book, this short list, oh, it's actually only 9 books, and this is it's not really a top 10, it's because I couldn't think of another book which I wanted to put in here. Like, you see all these, like, top 100 books of all time, top 10 science fiction books of all time, top 25 science fiction books of all time, top 100, it's all kind of the similar kind of thing, these classic science fiction books, which are generally considered to be classics. You know, none of the books on this list, all of the books on these lists make all of the top 100, top 50 lists.
All of them appear there.
Yeah, all of them appear in these other lists. But there's a lot of books which do appear in those other lists of top 100 books, top 50 books, which I read and go, have you actually read that since you were 15 years old? Have you read that in the last 15 years? Because some of these books really don't hold up. Some of them, like just the writing isn't very good. Like stuff like Brave New World, it's like, yeah, at the time it was an influential book, but you read it now, it's just not, like for me, it's just not a very enjoyable novel. It's a strange thing. So this is actually not in order that I read them or order that I would rank them, because I don't think there's an easy way of ranking, like, which is better, you know, War of the Worlds or 1984. Like, for me, actually, to be honest, out of those two, I think 1984 is probably the better. But, like, I'll just go through some of these books here in chronological order as they were written and published. So the number one in this list, I guess, is War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. You read that one?
Yes.
Yeah?
I read it.
You like
it? And it's just really good.
It is really good.
And I really wish there would be a movie which would not be made into like a
modern day movie.
I really wish they would do like a steampunk kind of like.
It's the original steampunk.
Yeah, and I really would like to see that, like people in like Victorian like dresses and wearing suits with hats and steam cars or whatever.
I'd love to see it like as a, because they actually have these two storylines. You follow the journalist, who is the unnamed narrator, and then you follow the journalist's brother, and you don't get to know his name either. And all of the movies and all the different versions always try and like combine those two
into one
character. Yeah. And I'd love to see like an adaptation of that which doesn't combine them. I have actually read The War of the Worlds quite a few times since starting the SFBRP. Normally, I review every single science fiction book that I read. You know, it's at the beginning of every episode. But I was actually writing a different version of War of the Worlds from the point of view of the Martians, from the point of view of the aliens that come down to land on Earth. And it was a fun writing project. I think I'll finish it one day, but because I was actually writing a book based so strongly on a single other novel, I read that novel many times through, you know, and kept going back and reading different bits and pieces of it as research. But I'll do a proper review of that book sometime. I'll get to it on the SFBRP. Next up is 1984 by George Orwell. And I reviewed this in an episode number 113 when I listened to the audiobook. This is a book that I read every few years, and it's just an amazing book. You've read this one, Juliana?
Yeah, I can't remember. I think we had to read it in school.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of books.
And if you have a book that you have to read in school, I don't remember if I even read it like completely properly. Yeah. And properly, because like if you have a book to read, like we also read the other one, which is with a pig.
pig?
Animal farm.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand it. And kind of like, no, it's cruel and raw.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Reading that again, I enjoyed it. And I will read a 1984 again as well. It's on my next to do.
Yeah, it's on your to-read list.
Yes, definitely.
So, yeah, amazing book. And I think that is, if I was to make a list of the top science fiction books ever for various reasons, like it's the most influential science fiction book, it's one of the best written science fiction books. I didn't give it 5 stars because of one minor complaint that I have in it, which I went into in that episode. But otherwise, yeah, I think it is just amazing science fiction. And it is, of course, so much good science. I mean, it's so highly regarded as science fiction that people who don't like science fiction don't regard it as science fiction just so they can keep highly regarding it. And I think that's a great sign of it. Next up in my classics that I think really hold up today is The Day of the Triffids by John Wyndham, which I actually reviewed in episode number 32 and in episode number 183. We reviewed that one together. You enjoy that one?
Yes.
It's a really, really good fun book. And I think that's actually probably one of the books that isn't on some of these top 100 books of all times, but I think should be, because like even when you read it today, it's still really well written. Again, some of the characters aren't so good. The love story is a bit like that, but it's such a great science fiction setup. It's like an alien invasion, but like an insidious kind
clever.
Of it's a very clever, clever kind of alien invasion story, so I really enjoy that. And and there's a really good movie adaptation which we talked about as well.
Kind of
28 Days Later, yeah, of course. Next up on the publication order is June by Frank Herbert, which I reviewed on episode number 11 and on episode number 174, which we reviewed together. You gave this a high rating, yeah? No, you gave it only 3 stars.
I gave it 3 stars, yes. I had some I think when we did the episode, I had some complaints about it.
You did have some complaints about it. It is a complex book, but it's a reason why this one and Ender's Game kind of swap places as book number one and number two in these top science fiction books of all time.
Also, I think a book drops a bit in my rating if the main character turns out to be a character I don't like so much.
Of course.
And then...
But this is a book which acknowledges that the main character starts off as someone you like and turns into someone you don't like, whereas like the Vorkosigan Staga, it starts off with this kid who I really didn't like, and he just grows less and less likable as the books go on. But it's like we're meant to be rooting for this character, and I'm like, no, this is like, and that's the good thing about Dune. It's like it really is the story of how Anakin becomes Darth Vader, but in a way which is subtle enough that people still think that he's the hero by the end of the book. And again, we went into that all through in that episode. I think we've talked about Dune enough on the SFPRP.
Yes,
okay. Next up is a book which I've not actually read for a while, but when I was younger, well, I say even when I was younger, like when I was like 15, you need science fiction which is a good way in for kids. And Robert Heinlein was a great, he wrote some really good juvenile novels, as they're called juveniles, like young adult novels back in the 1950s. Have Spacesuit Will Travel is probably one of my favourites from his juveniles. A lot of his other novels, which get, you know, high praise, like Stranger in a Strange Land, I didn't finish. You know, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress is very good, but I don't think it's, you know, it's all of his like later science fiction or more adult science fiction, even Starship Troopers, which was a juvenile novel. It feels a bit too, you know, polemical, a bit too preachy, whereas Have Spacesuit Will Travel is very much like an adventure. It's like, yay, and now we go here, and now we go to the moon, and now we go to Mercury, and now we, no, not Mercury, Pluto, and now we go here, and you just keep getting further and further. It's a really great, like what you call like a grand tour novel. It's like we go here and we explore this place, and then we go there and explore that place, and we just go there and explore that place. And yeah, it's just a really fun novel, but and also so clever. It's got a spacesuit that talks to him. As he goes, and I think that's being made into a movie as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you: was that an adaptation?
Adaptation.
Adaptation.
Adaptation. Let me just. Should we just do a quick Google for that one?
I think you mentioned that.
I think it was going to be. It might have become a movie. Yeah, look here. It's got an IMDb title. It's called In Development, but there's really nothing else there. As that, but you know, you think that, you know, of all the Heinlein books which haven't been made into movies yet, I think something like Have Spacesuit Will Travel would be one which is most exciting. You know, it would be a really, really good, really good kids movie, because it's about a young guy who gets a spacesuit and puts together a spacesuit, because he wins a spacesuit in a competition. And it's like this unused spacesuit, like this old NASA spacesuit that's coming around. It's like, yeah, you can win it. And he's like, great. And he gets it. And because he's like really into, you know, he's a geek and tinkers and stuff. He's like, yeah, I'll do this. And he fixes it all up and he fixes the radio and he fixes this and he fixes that and he makes a compressor and fills it up. And it's like, yes, this is great. And then he goes, I really need the money. I should really just sell this back to them or sell this to a museum or something. But then he goes out and he turns on the radio and he goes out into his back garden and goes, can anyone hear me? And an alien spacecraft sweeps down and picks him up. And he's like, holy shit. And then he's got to rely on his own technical wizardry.
How old is he?
He's like, he's just going into college, so he's like 18 years old or something like that. Huh. But when he gets picked up, then he has to walk across, the first part of the book is him having to walk across the moon in a spacesuit, which he himself has made spaceworthy. And you're just like, this is great! Because it's a kid who is, like, unlike some of these spaceship stories where it's like, oh yes, and I built this whole spaceship myself, and then I go, and you're like, yeah, you're 18, you're not really good enough to do that. But you can imagine that an 18-year-old kid could patch up an old spacesuit and make it spaceworthy. And then the cool thing is that he doesn't have to get to the moon. A spaceship, like an alien spaceship, takes him to the moon. But then he has to, like I say, he has to rely on his own engineering and technical. And as it goes through the book, he's got to rely on, he has to find out other things that he has in him as an 18-year-old kid that he can also rely on until he's saving the world or saving the universe or saving the planet. You know, it just, every step along the way is like this extra progression. So yeah, that's one of my favorite Heinlein books. And of course, you might as well put on some Heinlein here. Let's move on a bit. Next up is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Now, this is one that we were just talking about that should make this list, but I think it's a better funny book than it is a science fiction book, yet it's got lots of science fiction stuff in that I really like. But I also think it's overrated. Like, people lift it up as like a massive cultural influence, and it does have that culture. So it's one of these books on, and the same for the next one, Ender's Game as well by Orson Scott Card. These books are generally considered to be great works of science fiction, but when I compare it to some of these others, I don't really... I think it kind of just leaves it out there. Like, Ender's Game, it's very accessible. Like, these are books which I would say to anyone, you've never read science fiction before, check out one of these books. You know, that's what this list is. And Ender's Game definitely deserves on that, but it deserves to be on that list. But as a novel, it relies a little... You've read it, yeah?
Which one?
Ender's Game.
I've read Ender's Game.
Yeah.
I have not read Hitchhiker's Guide.
No, but...
just watched a movie.
You watched a movie, yeah. But Hitchhiker's Guide was never a novel to begin with. It was a radio play, and then it became a novel, and then it became a different... You know, and then it was a TV show. And I think Hitchhiker's Guide is a better kind of science fiction world. It's a better science fiction creation than it is a science fiction novel, if you understand. There's like... Because the movie, the TV show, the radio series, the audio books, and all these different things combine into a really good science fiction product. But as a novel, as a story, I don't think it's a classic story, even though it has got some really classic science fictional elements to it. I think as a story, it doesn't hold up. And Ender's Game, again, as a novel, I think it's very good. But again, the protagonist is a bit weird. What were we saying before about... Oh, no, this is a series, you know. It's a good book, but I don't think it... Maybe it's bad for me to say this, but I guess you can get my full review, or one of my full reviews, in episode 58. Although, episode 58, I remember actually what I did is I just packaged up and re-released the review that I did for the Books You Should Read podcast. I just re-released that as an SFBRP, I think, so it's strange. So, moving on to the next one in this top 9 list, I guess, is Player of Games by Ian M. Banks, which I'm actually currently listening to as an audiobook, and Julianne is currently listening to. We'll talk about that.
I'm reading it.
Yeah, you're reading it as an ebook, yeah. That will be episode number 202. Yeah, a little preview for the future. Episode number 201 will be an introduction to our culture reading
book club
thing, that we're going to be reading all of the culture books in a specific order. We'll introduce that in episode 201, which we'll record this afternoon. And then once we've both finished Player of Games, we'll get onto it and record number 202. So not so much there. And it's interesting to see that Player of Games and Use of Weapons are the two Ian M. Banks books which always make these top 25 science fiction books, or the top 100 science fiction books of all time. You know, those are the two books. None of the other culture books he've ever mentioned on those lists, whereas Player of Games and Use of Weapons do make it. And finally, on this list is that I reviewed back on episode number 143, is Fire Upon the Deep by Verna Vinge, which is probably, if I was to list, like, reduce this list down to my top 5 books of all time, if this was going, this top 9 was going to become top 5 classic books, it would be War of the Worlds, 1984, Dune, player of games and Fire Upon the Deep. If this was being a top five list, I'm not sure which order they would be in. But Fire Upon the Deep is an amazing book. It's got some of the best fun technology in it, and just the zones of thoughts and the aliens in this are really, really good. Special mention for A Deepness in the Sky, which I think is almost kind of a better book set in the same universe, but it's like the follow-up, kind of follow-up slash prequel to Fire Upon the Deep. I think you should read them, Juliana, if you can find them in German.
Okay.
I think they're really worth reading. Amazing science fiction, and like I say, certainly top five. Do not read Children of the Sky, which is the sequel to Fire Upon the Deep, because it's shit. Just really, really disappointing. That might even make my top list of most disappointing sequels or something. If I had that list, I don't have that list. So, good.
So, why no Alistair Reynolds?
Why no Alistair Reynolds? Because I think Alistair Reynolds is still, he's still like, I know it's weird to say, but he's still currently writing. That's weird to say because, you know, Orson Scott Card is still currently writing and Verna Vinge is still currently writing. But it's like, I think some of his best books, like his top books, like for example, Terminal World or House of Suns, are great books, but they're not classics yet. They're not making classic lists, you know, of top science fiction. These ones, none of these books are from after 90. I think Fire Upon the Deep is from like 91 or something like that. And I think a book needs 20 years to tell if it's a classic or not.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, Ender's Game is definitely a classic. Player of Games is already a classic. It like came out in 88 or something, 86, 88. And I think Alistair Reynolds, like Revelation Space, that whole series is, spoiler for later on, it's in my top five series of all times, books, but I don't think any single one of his novels can be held up as like, this as a standalone book is one of the greatest science fiction novels of all time.
Okay.
Yet. You can definitely say some of the best books of the 90s, some of the best books of the 2000s. You know, he's at that level. Certainly one of my favorite authors currently writing. But, like, I can't, you know, at the moment I can't hold it up against Dune, the novel. Yeah.
What about Isaac Asimov?
Mm. Again, Isaac Asimov, I think, like Heinlein, Arthur C. Clarke and Isaac Asimov, I think, were very good writers, but I don't think any single one of their books holds up as the greatest novel. Like, you can say Caves of Steel by Asimov is a really good book, but if I was to read it now, it wouldn't have the same impact as, say, Dune or 1984 or even Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, his robot series, you know, his short stories and all of the robots is good. And I mean, it is like as culturally significant as some of these other books. Like,
it's a classic.
But I don't think any one single novel holds up against these other ones.
So you would put it in like a universe or series?
Yeah,
or...
like his robot writings. But I think I think Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke were better short story writers. You know, there's some of my favorite short stories of all time would be by Arthur C. Clarke and Isaac Asimov. But as novelist, I don't rate them highly. Like, you think, well, what's Arthur C. Clarke's best novel? You're thinking, you know, Rendezvous with Rama, and it's a good book. But it doesn't rank up there with me. It will be listed on all of these top 100 science fiction books of all time. But for me, it doesn't break through to that next level like these other books do. As like, if you want science fiction, good science fiction, any one of these previous ones. So anyway, I think we've gone on quite a lot about that. What time is it now in the podcast? Yeah, we've gone half an hour and we've only got through one list. Thankfully, these other lists are going to be a bit shorter. But I don't mind running long. It's episode number 200.
Yeah,
you should not care about. No, okay. So let's go to other top 10. And I've got a fun list here because I asked for other people's top fives and other people's top tens and things like that and on goodreads.com. And Ryan posted one, top five science fiction books that bent my mind and I enjoyed. He puts number five, Stories of Your Life and Others by Ted Chiang, which I've reviewed here. Number four, Roadside Picnic by Boris and Arkady Strugatsky, which I've also read and reviewed. Totally mind-bending. That is a book which I you know, you finish reading it like, no, no, and you're reading like this guy, all he's doing is crawling under a fence and you're like, no, go back, what's going to happen? Is his brain blowing up? What's going on? Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick is number three. Solaris is number two. All of these I've reviewed on the SFBRP. And then number one, Cloud Atlas. That's his top science fiction book that's bent his mind. So we were thinking before we watch the movie, because we can get that on Blu-ray and watch it all beautiful over the course of 4 hours or however long the movie is, we should read that. I think it's by David Mitchell is the author of Cloud Atlas. So should we do that?
Yeah.
A joint reading?
I just put it here on my Goodreads to read.
Put it on your Goodreads to read. Good idea. So taking that, I thought I would list some of my favourite books since starting the essay, because people say, yeah, give us your top 10 of all time, but then give us your top books which you've read since you've started the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, which are new to you since reading the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, or new to you in the past 10 years that you've read, or, you know, the newer books. So here's a top six, and then I'll do another top four in a second. So this is top 10 books since starting the SFBRP. The first ones are ones that I've not read before the SFBRP and read for the first time. So at number six, which is a book which bent my brain, which is Hyperion by Dan Simmons. You know, I read that on reviewed it episode number 49, and then we did it as a joint discussion, me and Juliana, back in episode number 168. I think was that our first joint episode, I think?
It was our
first joint episode. Yeah, a really, really great book. I read it once and then listened to it as an audiobook, and you listened to it as an audiobook as well, didn't you?
Oh, yes, a German audiobook.
Yeah, a German audiobook. And really, really great book, and one that kind of bends your brain a bit in a way that, like, you don't understand, like, you, like, where, you know, where are these people connected, what is the connection between these people. So it is a bit of a brain bender. Oh no, he says Ryan says bent my mind, I put bent my brain, but both ways. But number five, not so much a mind-bending book, but it's Earth Abides by George R. Stewart, which I reviewed on episode number 106, and this was actually an SFF audio discussion, so it wasn't like a normal discussion. It was me and Jesse and Eric, and I think maybe Scott or Tamahomi was on, I can't remember, but and it's an amazing book where not very much happens. It's like a post-apocalyptic kind of thing. There's like a plague which wipes out all of people except for like a few people in each city survive, and it's like, well, what do they do afterwards? And it just tells the story. Nothing really happens, but it's told from the point of this guy who thinks he's like he's going to be this new leader in this new world, and it turns out he's just not. He's useless at being the leader, but because he's the male in a male-dominated society, he thinks, yes, I'm going to be in charge because I'm the man. And yeah, anyway, it's a really, really good book. I really love that book. One of my highest rated books. These are, like I say, my favorite books that I've read for the first time since starting the SFBRP. The next one, which is a great mind-bending one, which is called The Scar by Sergei and Marina Diachenko. I reviewed that in number 161, and that was an amazing book because I never knew where it was going to go. It was like at every point in the story, I was like, where is this story going? And normally that would really annoy me, but the character was such an interesting character, and the writing was so beautiful, and it was a translation as well, and the translation was really great. And it was narrated by Jonathan Davis. He actually recommended it to me and was like, yeah, you should read this one. It's my favourite book that I've narrated. So that's really good. Number three on Books That Bent My Brain / top 10 since starting the SFBRP is The Prestige by Christopher Priest, which I reviewed in episode number 177. Really great book, kind of science fiction-y. Again, I gave that 5 stars. I think it wouldn't appeal to everyone, I don't think, but for me it was highly rated because it is about like a variety entertainer, and it was about an artist making his way in the world and stuff, and there's lots of good stuff in there. Anathem by Neal Stephenson is at number 2. I reviewed that episode number 75, and that really, like, if you want to read a book which is a new, which for me it was a new reading experience, and it was like an amazing science fiction creation in a way that, like, the way that it was written, and other people have said this about the book as well, it kind of reprograms your brain to think in a different way, to think in a new way. But it is a slog. Well, it's not a slog to get through, but you have to put the effort into thinking about this. He's literally rebuilt an entire cosmos from the Planck length up with a basis in a different philosophy and a slightly different science than we have in this real world, and yet made a world which is recognisable and also weirdly plausible because it's based on real philosophy and real... Anyway, it's amazing stuff. And then the number one book, I think, that I've read for the first time since starting the SFBRP, which has also bent my brain, is, of course, Solaris by Stanislav Lem. It's just really, really good. I reviewed that number 132 and episode number 198, which we reviewed together. I don't think you liked it quite so much as me,
no.
but uh, After watching the movies, I think it's funny because after watching the movie, you liked it more. And the same with Dune. After watching the movie of Dune, you liked the book more.
Because the movie was so bad.
Yeah, and one of the Solaris movies was so bad.
One question.
What's up?
Is Slaughterhouse 5 coming up somewhere? Because in your list, it just has a 5-star rating. Like one of the five books that with a 5-star rating. And does it come up somewhere?
Well, the thing is, I read that and decided to review it for the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, despite I don't think it's science fiction. You know, it was one of those things when we read The Life of Pi, and I was like, oh, The Life of Pi is really good. And people said, oh, we should review it for the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. And I'm like, yeah, but like, if it's just a book about somebody making up a story or like telling lies to himself to get him through a situation, like, is that science fiction or is it just something that's happening in somebody's brain? Or if it did really happen, is it just because it's untrue and stuff which is slightly science fictional? You know, it's one of those weird things that's
more the question about when does science fiction start and fiction ends?
Yeah, and I thought for me that was very much more about somebody creating a world in his creating a world in his brain to get him through a situation, and that world was much more influenced by his upbringing. Within the book, Pi, his upbringing in different religions and different cultures, and living in it, he was brought up in a zoo. So when he starts thinking about stuff that gets him through the situation, is he going to imagine himself as an alien or is he going to imagine himself as a tiger? And spoiler, he imagines himself as a tiger. Or if it's a real story, it's like it's just an untrue story. Whereas I think Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse 5, it's about... Billy Pilgrim, who, to get him through his post-traumatic stress of being in Dresden when it was firebombed and all the different stuff that was there, he invents a science fiction abduction story for himself, based purely on Kilgore Trout's novels within the book. So it's one of those weird things that both of them, to get them through this different stuff and to recreate their... to give themselves something to live for, create a non-real world for themselves in their own brain, which is then expressed within the novel as true, but it's very clearly not true in both novels. I know that's a weird way of talking around it, but I don't think, even though Life of Pi is and Slaughterhouse 5 both present a similar kind of story, like an untrue story being presented as true, whereas Slaughterhouse 5, a big part of it has got science fiction themes in it, whereas Life of Pi doesn't have science fiction themes in it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, there is no alien abduction in Life of Pi.
In Slaughterhouse 5, obviously. I haven't read it.
I reviewed it for the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, but I don't really consider it science fiction in the same way that these other books are science fiction.
Okay.
I know it's a weird thing to say, what is science fiction or what isn't science fiction, but me... I don't know.
Question for another episode.
And yeah, like I should actually do my what is science fiction, what is fantasy, what is not. So let's get onto the next list, which was going to be a top five. The previous one was going to be a top five, and this was going to be a top five, but I combined them together into a top 10, even though it's not. It's two different lists. There were 6 in that one and 4 in this one. So this is books that I read before starting the SFBRP, which weren't in my... which wouldn't have made my top 10 list or my top five list before then. But after reading them a second time, I was like, oh, no, this really is genius. This really is one of the top novels. So all of these novels that I'm saying now could make it into my top 10, or top 20, put it that way, of all time. So number 4 is I Am Legend by Richard Matheson. I read this book years ago, enjoyed it quite a bit, and then I listened to the audiobook version. And I was like, oh, no, this is really good. It's really, really good. So number 3, Flowers for Algernon by... Daniel something. I should have really written it down. What is it? It should be right there at the top, somewhere. Doesn't matter. I can remember the name of it. Daniel Keyes. That's it. Thanks for looking that up. That's really handy that Juliana's got that episode list stuff in front of her. So I reviewed this episode number 116, and I think I've read the novel before, but as I was reading it, I was like, well, I didn't remember much of it, so I was thinking that I might have read the short story version of it before, because there was a novel version and a short story version, and I was thinking, well, maybe I've only read the short story version of it before, and it made me cry like a little boy. That's my little notes that I put here. Number 2 is The Man in the High Castle, which I read, like I said, when we reviewed it. We didn't review it that long ago, episode number 180, and I read it when I was younger, and I was like, oh, that's pretty good, and then it was when I listened to it again, I was like, no, this is just the best novel ever. I think I gave it 5. five stars. Yeah, that's the last book I gave five stars. And also, top in this list is Ian M. Banks's Use of Weapons. And the first time I read it, I read it just because it was another culture novel, and it was different from the other culture novels because it's a lot more, you know, intense. It's a lot more a lot more literary as well, because it's, you know, got the out of time, you know, some of the story runs forward and some of the story runs backwards and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't really get it. I didn't really go, oh, now I see what it's about. And the second time I read it, I was like, Oh, right. Ian M. Banks is a genius. I thought he was a genius, but now he's like, oh, no, he really is a genius. And he's a genius at storytelling and at writing, not just about world creation and coming up with fun story ideas. Actually, as a writer, he's a genius as well. So let me just check the time. How long have we gone through here? Oh, 45 minutes. Oh, we're not doing too bad. So I've got through all of the top novels. That's top novels. Let's move on to top series. Rick. On Goodreads, he says, how about top five trilogies? And he said, number five, Uplift Saga by David Brin. Number four, Void Trilogy by Peter F. Hamilton. Number three, The Expanse by James S. A. Corey, which, to be honest, I've not read. The Gaia series by John Varley, which I've not read. And then The Dune, the original, by Frank Herbert. Now, I have a bit of a problem for this. Uplift Saga is not a trilogy. There's one book, which is Sundiver, and then another one, The Star Tide Rise. And there's different books which make up different stories, you know, the Uplift Wars, you know, this different kind of stuff. I really like the Uplift universe. I like the idea of it, but I only think there's, like, two really good novels in there, and then the rest of them are like, and then the next one is like, it's not a trilogy. It's like, there's not, you wouldn't say this is a trilogy, whereas the Void trilogy was written as a trilogy. It's one story over this number of novels. And Dune, I don't think there's a way to consider Dune a trilogy and not a series. Like, it's, for me, Dune is either the novel, or you go, it's the original Dune series, which is six books written by the same guy in order, telling a story in order. And then there's all the expanded universe stuff, which was written by his son, and, you know, these other things that go into it. So I can't see Dune as a trilogy. So instead of it in trilogies, I decided to go for a top five series. And it's weird that actually, let me put it this way, these series have to be like a self-contained world that you don't, maybe not have to read them in order, but they have to be like an overall kind of story, if you know what I mean, set in a world, and they have to be consistently high quality. So unfortunately, it was weird to say this, but the culture series doesn't make it, because there's a few stories which just aren't as good as the others. Even though individually, like if you just read that book individually as a story, like if you just read Matter or if you just read Inversions, you'd be like, actually, I really enjoy Inversions, but like as a book by itself, some of the books kind of bring the series down as they go on. Like once you get past, like in the Dune series, I enjoyed the first book a lot and the next book, okay, and the next book, okay. But once you get past book four in the Dune series, I'm just like, really, just don't even bother. And then all the rest of them is like, no, just don't even bother. But most people stop Dune after the first book, and some people stop Dune after the first chapter. So I'm going to go for a number five in my series is going to be Pandora's Star plus Judas Unchained plus the Void Trilogy, plus the other short stories set in that. I think it's the Commonwealth World, which is really, really great, by Peter F. Hamilton. I reviewed those books in episode number 30, 39, and 108. Those are the Void Trilogy. I read the Pandora's Star and Judas Unchained before starting the SFBRP. Great, really good, really good series. It's like two main story arcs put together there, and I just really enjoy Peter F. Hamilton, so that goes in there. Number four, I'm going to put the Mars trilogy, and this is, you know, the Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars, amazing future history stuff set on Mars. It's amazing stuff. Again, I've only ever read them once through. Actually, most of these I've only ever read once through, but it really does, in the past when I read that, I was just like, that's amazing, and there's a reason why that trilogy also makes these top 20 books, science fiction books. But just on itself, I don't think Red Mars holds together, but as like a vision, as a full series, it really does go through. Number three is Otherland by Tad Williams, which doesn't make a lot of these lists, but in the 90s, this was the big series. But if you go into secondhand bookshops now, you realise just how big this series was, because like whole shelves are just made, like filled up of loads and loads of copies of the Otherland series by Tad Williams. It's like a cyberpunk adventure where people go inside a machine and there's people chasing people through the like these virtual reality worlds, and there's stuff happening in the real world as well, but because it's all virtual reality and these millionaires and billionaires set up worlds which they want to live in forever, as gods or as kings or anything like that. They set up these worlds, and as these people go through the different worlds, it's like, okay, and now we'll have a Dungeons and Dragons Tolkien-like adventure. Okay, and now we're going to be in the desert in Egypt, and now we're going to be in this science fiction world, and now we're all going to be small people, and there's going to be these huge bugs chasing it, and it's just like any, pretty much any world that Tad Williams wants to write about. It's like, yep, and now go in that world, and like, woohoo, and now we're going to do like the Greek heroes, and now we're going to, yeah, it's just loads of really good stuff and some really fun characters. There's this really, I think I talked to you about this before, there's a guy who goes into it, I can't remember his name, it's like Gabu, but it starts with an exclamation mark. The guy's name starts with an exclamation mark, which is always
Why
funny.
Not?
Well, he's like, he's from this like tribe, like this, I'd say the prehistoric tribe from South Africa, where they, you know, they speak in the like that, and the way that he pronounces his name, which is Gabu, it's got an exclamation mark, and he goes into this virtual reality construct, and everyone, like one guy goes in, he's got a big sword, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to be prepared for anything. And other people go in as like, you know, military people. He goes in as a baboon. He's just like, yeah, I'm a monkey, because monkeys, like being a monkey with a human mind is going to be way more handy with this. And while everyone else is like struggling, he's just climbing up stuff and saving the day. And it's just like, why isn't everyone a monkey? Like, everybody should just be a monkey. That's way more handy. If you can be anything, be a monkey with a human's brain, because you're stronger, you're fitter, you can get... It's not like... Because monkeys don't live as long as humans. Well, I guess apes do, don't they? Like, apes live 70 yeah. years and stuff. So, anyway, really good stuff. And also, on Facebook, it says favorite quotes, and there's only one favorite quote which is in there, which is by the psycho character, the psycho assassin character from that series, and his little motto that he repeats to himself is confident, cocky, lazy, dead. And that's something which I kind of live by. Like, as a professional juggler, if I get too confident, I get, you know, it's confident, and then I get cocky, and then you're lazy, and then you're dead. And that works as someone who juggles for a living, and it just keep it in mind, because it's really clever. Every time that he thinks he should be confident, it's like, I shouldn't be confident, because as soon as I'm confident, I get cocky, and people who are cocky get lazy, and then they get dead. And it's, I know, it's just a really cool thing. So that's series number three. Number two is Neverness by David Zindel. And there's a book, a standalone book called Neverness, which I think is really, really good. It's like Dune, but set on an icy world, and there's humans and cold stuff and ice skating and, and lots of other random stuff. It's difficult to say. There's like, and then there's a whole series set after that, like another trilogy called The Requiem for the Homo Sapiens, and it's a good series. I'd say it stands up here, because as you read the first book, you're like, that's really good, I'll read the next one. You read it, and often in these series they kind of go down. Like, even the Mars trilogy, the first book is really good, and then like as you read on, you're like, eh, okay, I've read this before. But this series, it just goes boom, hits you. The second book is kind of like the first book, but with the guy's son, and then it's like, oh, and this next book, he just goes on a tour of the entire galaxy, let's just go off, and you're like, whoa, what's going on? And then in the last book, it's like, and now he goes back to this ice planet, and you're like, wow, this is like, and every book, it's one of those rare series of books which there's a book and then a trilogy, and all of the books are really high quality, and they stay high quality. So that's what I'd recommend it. But again, I've not read that for 10 years. So hopefully some of these recommendations hold up. And number one is Revelation Space by Alistair Reynolds, which starts off Revelation Space, Redemption Arc, Absolution Gap, plus The Prefect and Chasm City, which are set before them in the same world, and Diamond Dogs Turquoise Days. We're actually listening to... The Prefect as audiobook at the moment. When we're driving, we put The Prefect on. You enjoying that one?
Yeah, very much. It's really good. So, I really like it. Especially the audiobook.
Yeah.
Because
John Lee is really good. So, that's why Alistair Reynolds, no single book of his, I think, is at the height of Dune. But Revelation Space and the world he's created as a series is way better than the Dune series. Even if the first book isn't at the same level as Dune, as the series goes on, every book has got something new to say and something really interesting and a really interesting story, much better than Dune or some of these other series. I do have some special mentions. A fantasy series called The Prince of Nothing by R. Scott Baker. I can't really include it in this list because it's not completed yet. Like, there was a first trilogy. The first two books were amazing. Most of the third book was amazing, and then it's let down by kind of a weak ending to the first trilogy. But then the next two books in the next trilogy really pick up again, and some of my favourite fantasy books that I've ever read. So, yeah, Prince of Nothing, but I can't really include that because, like I say, maybe the last book in that second trilogy is going to bring it down.
So it's still...
It's still ongoing. He's doing a trilogy of trilogies. So he's 2 books through the second trilogy, and it might all fall apart in the end, but hopefully it won't. And if it doesn't, it's going to be one of my favourite fantasy series of all time. And the other one that I've got is by C.J. Cherry, which is the Company Wars series with, you know, down below... Oh, actually, I have this open on the Wikipedia page. Let me just open this. There's some really good stuff. The Company Wars in the Alliance Union universe. You've got Heavy Time, Hellburner, Down Below Station, Merchant's Luck, Rimrunners, Tripoint, and Finity's End. And I read most of those books in the 1990s. I think Finity's End, yeah. Finity's End comes out in 97, so it's from 91 to 97. When I was 17, these were my favourite books. But, again, it's one of those weird things that I've not read. There's, like, loads of other books in this series. There's, like, Cytene, and, you know, some other novels set in that same world. And I know it's weird to say this, that we've got 45 minutes in, and this is my first... I think this is... No, more than 45 minutes in now. What are we up to? Quite a long way. 55 minutes in, and this is the first time I've mentioned a female author. But it has... I know, I kind of feel bad in that way, but maybe... But we were talking about before, should we do top 5 female science fiction or top 5 this or that by female authors? But it's really difficult because I have to hold these books up in the same way, in the same standards. And I don't want to be sexist or anything, but a lot of the science fiction that I really enjoy is by women. But when it comes down to picking the tops, the top 10 of a list or the top 5 of the list, unfortunately... It seems like male science fiction authors come in ahead of that.
Like, I just think there are not so many women.
There's not so many of them. Yeah, I know there's not so many of them.
Writing them.
But like, if I look back through all of the females who I've reviewed on science fiction on the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, no matter how much I really enjoyed Ursula K. Le Guin's The Dispossessed, I don't think Dispossessed is gonna be on the same list or on my same top 5 list as, say, The Man in the High Castle or even Flowers for Algernon, you know, because it just didn't affect me in the same way. Even though I think it's an amazing story, and I think she's an amazing writer, when you're making top 5 lists, it's very difficult to sometimes include these. Like, definitely there'll be lots of female authors in my top 10 lists, but sometimes in the top 5 lists, they just because there's not so many of them, they just fall off. Like,
we have way more.
But
books from men, and if you like put it down to like if you compare the few books that you take out from the men's to put in like the best the top 5 and then you have like even fewer women's
just a smaller selection. But however, if I was gonna make a list of top 10 or top 5 military science fiction books, I think like Shards of Honor would be on there. You know, it would definitely be on that book. You know, even though that's normally considered like a male kind of thing, sort of like yay gung ho stuff like that, because it's written by a woman, actually better. Like Heavy Time or Down Below Station is some of my favorite science fiction works of all time as a series, as a world, as the different passages. But like I say, as a classic science fiction book for me, Down Below Station is up there. It would be certainly be in a top 20 of mine, you know, and that's why I want to include this in my series, but it's weird for me to say that I read it so long ago. I read Down Below Station twice. Actually, I was going to mention this. Down Below Station was the last novel that I read before I started doing the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. So it's that was one of those books which kind of inspired me. It's like, oh, I really want to talk about this kind of stuff. So let's get into it. But then I never went back and reviewed it again. So maybe we should read some C.J. Cherry and see if we can review some of that in the future. Moving on now to... what else do I have? Oh, yeah, so special mention for Prince of Nothing and The Company Wars, the Union versus Alliance thing by C.J. Cherry. So, highest rated, most reviewed author. Now, this is a little bit more of a scientific way of looking at it, a bit more methodical way. Rather than just picking authors out, I decided to look through authors who I've reviewed more than one of their books on the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, and then look at the star ratings and work out an average and see... like, which ones come to the top since I did this. So it goes this way. Peter Watts, who, I don't think he's written a classic science fiction novel, even though... go down to the bottom list and look it up. on the list of authors right there on the bottom, you can see all the books. But he is one of my favorite science fiction authors currently writing, because he releases a book and it will bend your brain. The stuff that he writes about and his writing style is so much fun, even though I don't think any of his single novels hold up there. But like I say, I looked up some of those lists, top 25 authors. His Blindsight novel is in these lists of top 25 authors, because I think he is one of the most interesting science fiction writers writing at the moment. So he gets a 3.875 rate, like average rating, because I read like three or four of his books on here as well. Alistair Reynolds gets 3.72, which is very highly rated, and he's my most read author as well. I've read 9 of his novels, and I think just because of Century Rain, if Century Rain wasn't included, he would, like, all of his books are like 3.5 to 4.5 star books. You know, he's generally really, except for that one novel, Century Rain,
really drops
which
down.
Just didn't appeal to. Yeah, it did bring his rating down quite a bit from, it would have been 4 stars otherwise or something like that.
Is that Revelation Space as well?
Yes, that includes Revelation Space. It's all in there. R. Scott Bakker, because of the Prince of Nothing series and stuff like that, he's got some high ratings. He's 4 star average over 3 books, even, but one of those reviews was for a whole series, the whole of the series I gave 3.5 stars to or something like that. Ursula K. Le Guin is on there for The Left Hand of Darkness and The Dispossessed. Both of those books, I think I gave them 3.5 stars and 4.5 stars, so averages out to 4 stars. And then Ian M. Banks, if I leave the M in his name, he gets an average of 4 stars over the books that we've reviewed. But if I include Transition, which is actually just, which he released under the name Ian Banks, he didn't consider that himself. He himself didn't consider that a science fiction novel worthy of his middle initial. So otherwise it does drop down to 3.75 stars if I include Transition, but if I keep it as a Ian M. Banks purist, he's up at 4 stars as well. Philip K. Dick, Peter F. Hamilton, Heinlein and John Wyndham also make it. But I think Heinlein only makes it in because I pick books that I know I like of his, rather than reviewing books that I know I don't like of his. Like, if I also reviewed Stranger in a Strange Land, his average would go down. And John Wyndham as well, one of my favourite authors as I was a child, because it's very child-friendly science fiction. So The Chrysalids and Day of the Triffids, both highly rated for me, so go there. So, which moves on to, I think we're, what are we now, like an hour of the way through? I should stop looking at the time. Yeah, an hour in. Let's talk about some bad science fiction, because people always want to hear about this. So, Jeff on the SFBRP listener group, he says, top 5 worst science fiction books. The Gripping Hand by Larry Niven is at number 5. I've not read that. Eternity by Greg Bear is at number 4. I have read that. And it's a real pity, because that's one of those follow-up novels. There's Eon, which is a really good novel, and then Eternity, which is really bad. Unfortunately, it's the follow-up. And then Cradle by Arthur C. Clarke and Gentry Lee. You remember when I said, don't read any books by Arthur C. Clarke, which have got somebody else as a co-author?
Yes.
Yeah, don't read that. I've not actually read it. I knew I'd... Double Full Moon Night by Gentry Lee, again, is at number 2. So there's 2 Gentry Lee novels after each other.
He might not be a good author.
He might not be a good author, yeah, I know. And then Light by John Harrison. I've not read that. I don't think I've read any John Harrison. I'm not sure. Anyway, but Light is often held up there as a good science fiction book, so I think Jeff included that. And then Moidelhoff, I don't know if that's his real name or something. Top five most disappointing sci-fi novels or series. Children of God, a number 5 by Mary Doria Russell. Not read that one. Number 4 is The Motor Around Murchison's Eye and The Gripping Hand by Niven and Pornell. I've not read that either. Number 3, Foundation by Isaac Asimov. I actually never rated that very highly as a series, even though that always makes the top 10 best of all times, which I never understand. Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson, number 2, and that's also considered like a great science fiction novel, which I don't understand. Finally, Uplift by David Brin. I think that's just because of the series. It's such a good... the world is so good, but as the series goes on. So I'm going to kind of combine these lists, not so much about the series, but like my bottom 5 list. It's really difficult for me to say worst science fiction novels I've ever read, because the worst science fiction novels I've ever read, I just don't get past chapter 3. Like, if it's really bad, I'll just stop reading it and won't review it. And I'm just... I don't even consider it a book that I've read. For example, like, you know, I started reading Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. However you meant to pronounce her name. But like when I was reading that, I was like, I'm not reading this as a science fiction book that I think I'm going to enjoy. And when I reviewed it, I didn't even rate it because I didn't complete it, if you know what I mean. So there are some of these books which, if it's so bad, I'm not even going to finish it. But here are some books which I read enough to finish and review some of them. So at number five is Daniel Suarez, Damon, which I reviewed on episode number 87. What did I give it? Number 87?
One
star, because the first third is really good and it was so highly recommended. It's like, oh yeah, it's written with modern technology. It's by someone who knows so much about modern technology and modern computers and network and all that kind of stuff. You'll really enjoy it. It'll be really great. And lots of people recommended it and I heard reviews of it and other people like doing Audible adverts on other podcasts that I enjoyed. They're all raving about this and I read it. And it started so well, and then it just went down. It would have been a really good short story or novella-length book.
I like the idea.
The idea is so good, but it just got so stupid. And I still get emails from people saying, you're wrong about Damon, you should read it. And the next book as well, the follow-up. I'm just not reading the follow-up book.
No, and there's a third one.
Really? Of course, he knows he's onto something good there. He got the geek... But it's just such a hateful book. Like when somebody's idea of a good solution to a problem is killing people. Like, I know it's weird to say, but spam is a problem. Okay, so what can you do? In this book, we should create technology that makes all the spammers die. And Google goes, no, we've got a better idea. We'll make technology which means that you don't have to look at spam anymore. And I'm like, hey, let's do that. Let's use the technology where people don't have to die. And Damon... appealed to the people who think it's a good thing that geeks should kill other people as a solution to technology problems. And it's just that whole kind of mindset in the book. And I find it really disturbing when people send me emails saying, oh, I read this and it changed the way I lived my life. And I'm like, ooh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, Juliana actually flinched at that when I said that. But that's the kind of thing that I find really bad. Number four is Neil Stephenson. Again, a book which was highly recommended by the Geek Nights podcast by Rim and Scott. And they read it and they would say, oh, this is going to be our first book in our book club. And I know normally, like their recommendations of stuff, I take on board. You know, like the game that we're reading, the Hanabi, or Hanabi, or however you pronounce it, Hanabi, is the game of the year of the Spiel des Jahres in Germany. So it's going to be a good game anyway. But they said, yeah, it's good. You should play it. And you know, I bought it and played it. Normally, their recommendations, I stand by. The Prince of Nothing, that was their recommendation as well. They have good recommendations. And Neil Stephenson, Snow Crash, they recommended that. And then they went away and read it and came back and they were both like, it's not as good as I remembered. And I was like, don't tell me. And I got lots of follow-up from that. So if you want to listen to one of my favourite, probably one of the most controversial events, because this also is held up as one of these, highly, highly...
I don't understand books. It either.
And I understand that it's kind of like a parody of cyberpunk and a cyberpunk novel at the same time. But it's just so bad. Like, it's just so bad. You can't... Yeah, anyway. You go back and listen to that review. These are my top five rants. Okay, number three is Dan Simmons' The Fall of Hyperion, which I reviewed in episode number 55. This is actually... This was so bad that I actually stopped reading it and read the Wikipedia page to spoil it for myself. And I know I said these are books that I actually read and reviewed, and actually finished and reviewed, but it's... just so bad. Like, after Hyperion, which is in there, like, Hyperion could have made my top 10, like, it could have made that top 10 classic list of all time, but it kind of can't make that. It makes my top 10 books I've read since starting the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. It can make that list. It can make that kind of top 10 list, but it can't make my top 10 list of all time because it's not a complete story. It kind of relies on Fall of Hyperion to finish off the story.
Yeah, you know, you want to know what's going on that planet.
And not so... Juliana's father just came home. Hey, how's the electioneering going? It's good? Yeah, good. Oh, okay. There's an election coming up in Germany. So the next one on my bottom or most biggest disappointments was actually a book which I had a previous girlfriend called Paula, and her parents would give me science fiction books. And normally they'd give me science fiction books that I really like. They're like, hey, you probably like Ian M. Banks. Here's The Algebraist. And I'm like, that's really good. You know my taste so well that you've given me a book that I've already read because it's Ian M. Banks. And why wouldn't I read an Ian M. Banks book as soon as it comes out? So, but sometimes they'd give me books which didn't really go. Ah, look, check it out. It's the biggest German science fiction author at the time. His name was Frank Schätzing. How do you pronounce it?
Frank Schätzing.
Frank Schätzing. And it's like, this is called Der Schwarm or The Swarm. And check it out. And it's the English translation of German science fiction, and it was just the worst book. And this was a book that I read like when I was starting thinking about, shall I do the science fiction book review podcast or not? And I was reading this book, and it was frustrating me so much. And I just wanted to tell everyone, like, don't read this book. Or if you want an example of some of the worst science fiction. And again, I'm not quite sure how much of it was down to the translation, but it must have been like the source material, how it's actually laid out as a story, and the things and the conversations that happen. It's like an anti example of good science. You know, when people say, oh, if you want to see how this, but like in, I don't know, it's like in Dune, when they go, like, if you, that table, the one of those scenes that I always wanted to talk about, you know, like when people are sitting around this table and they're all having a conversation, they all know, everybody knows everything, and it's still amazing drama. And it's like people have read all these great science fiction books and have just thought, how can I just do the opposite of all of that, you know? All of the, and then one example just comes up. There's like people in it, they're sitting around in a room. It's like, and they actually say, right, we've got this technology. Who here doesn't know what this technology is? And somebody, it's like an unnamed character, will just say, I don't know what it is. And then we get three pages of someone explaining technology to the one person in the room who doesn't understand the technology.
Which is actually the reader.
The reader. But it just happens time and time again. It's just like, come on, like at least. Why don't you just go, okay, you as a reader, like, why can't the narrator just tell us what we need to know? But it's not, we have to read these long conversations of people explaining stuff to each other, and that's the smallest, that's the most easily...
And I've read this book as well. Of course, I've read it in German, and I can't really remember everything, because it's like...
Oh, it's a massive
book.
A
very chunky book. It's very big.
But it's technology porn for Germans. I've heard other Germans say this, that he actually goes up and does readings. He goes up and does like readings from his book, and he'll read out a really cool bit of technology, you know, or a bit of military technology, or a bit of new cool ideas that he had. And there was some good stuff in there. But just overall, I mean, there was some
really... I didn't like the plot. Like...
No, the plot is stupid, but when he wipes out all of Europe with a tsunami, you're like, wow, that's really interesting. You know, oh, that could have, you know, it's all like stuff under the sea coming out and getting us. And there are some really great scenes in it. And that's why when you start off, you're like, oh, this could be amazing.
Yeah, the beginning was good. And then at one point,
the killer whales start killing people and the crabs come out and start doing stuff. And you're just like, oh, this could be really great. But as you go on, and that's why it's a disappointment for me, because I was expecting like the greatest science, like the greatest German science fiction. Yeah. And it just kind of put me off
the
German
twist
science fiction.
Was just not worth it.
There wasn't even a twist. It was just like, well, but then it's like, how did he name the main threat in the book? I don't know if it's in German, but they're called the Gür. And they're called the Euro because he accidentally hit his hand into a keyboard, and he decided, oh, I'll just stick with that. And I'm like, is that the guy in the novel who decided that the things were going to be called the Euro?
Or what?
Yeah, like the main bad guys in the story, like the thing that he needed a placeholder for this alien threat, and he was like, oh, I'll just call it the Euro, spelt Y-R-R. And I'm like, well, why that? And he's like, oh, it was just a typo. And you're like, is that the author? Is that the author making the? Yeah, it's the YRR, the U. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And I'm just like, the author made a typo and just left in the place name. It's like, you know, it's like the hero and protagonist of this story is going to be called Hero Protagonist. And you're like, yeah, but when you publish the book, you're going to go through and actually change that to a real name, aren't you? It's like, no, he's just going to be Hero Protagonist. And you're like, really? And this is one of those things. It's like the U, and it looks like something he's put into the novel that is easily replaceable, you know, like you do your find and replace, and you just go through and replace the Yrrr, because that's not going to be, the YRR isn't going to be in any other words. You can easily replace that. Anyway, there's many things about that book which is super disappointing, but I don't need to do a rant on it now. Let's find it. Oh, yeah, and finally, Hominids by Robert J. Sawyer really is at number one, which I reviewed in episode number 36, which is another early rant episode of mine. Did you listen to that one? I think it's...
Yes.
It's so bad in every way.
Really nice.
And it was the book that I read in the SFBRP, which made me think that I am never going to take on board anything that any book that has won the Hugo, any Hugo-winning book that it has won the Hugo... I have to just accept that is never going to be a sign of quality. Like, there is never going to be a book which wins the Hugo that I should read just because it won the Hugo. And saying this, I'm glad I didn't know that The Vor Game, that won the Hugo. I knew Barrière won the Hugo, but reading Barrière winning the Hugo, you're like, oh, this is good. It's in a series that the author has got a good following. She's got a following. It's going to win, you know, it's going to win this thing.
I think, like, prices that are based on fans who vote for something never really shows the quality of something. It just shows that there are loads
popular
of people
appeal.
To popular people, or that the series is good and people like the series, which doesn't
mean... Or the author is good and people like the author. Yeah. But Robert J. Sawyer won it because this was the first Worldcon where they do the voting, which was in Canada. And he's a Canadian author who released a book very much set in Canada. And it's like, so most people who go along to that thing, I mean, it's going to be oversubscribed by Canadians. And I'm not saying that's the only reason he won. He probably does have a following, but he has a Canadian following. It's like when Neil Gaiman was the guest of honour at Worldcon. And he also just happened to win the Hugo. And the reason why he won the Hugo is because...
Because he was there. Because,
no, it's because he was there. And people were going to go to Worldcon because they wanted to meet him or see him and get his autograph or, you know, talk to him or whatever they wanted to do. So if he hadn't have been there, he probably wouldn't have... You know, it's just this weird thing. So Hominids, it really soured me to both Robert J. Sawyer and the Hugos. And there's other reasons anyway. So... To finish off this podcast, I thought that would take about an hour to get to that point, and it's taken us an hour and 15 minutes. So we'll just finish off by going through some of the top five lists, because other people posted some top five lists to the SFBRP listener group, and I thought I'd just share some of these. I'm not going to make that many comments of them, but Guillermo said, top five female badass characters in science fiction that I wouldn't want to run into in a dark alleyway, which I think is a great thing. So at number five is Moneta from Dan Simmons' Hyperion, which is pretty good. Sigourney Weaver, number four from... Signe Mallory. I was just saying Sigourney Weaver because I saw Signe. No, Signe Mallory from CJ Cherry's Down Below Station, which is good. Ilya Volyova from Alistair Reynolds' Revelation Space series. Jessica Atreides from Frank Herbert's Dune. And number one, Paula Mayo from Peter Hamilton's Commonwealth and Void series, which is good. I would, if I was to include, I would include Sigourney Weaver in that, but in that as well. I don't know why that was maybe a Freudian slip there, slipping her into number four. And also, I'd include Dzeet Sma from The Player of Games and State of the Art. Maybe not just her, but also the other kick-ass culture operatives and contact operatives, or the special circumstance operatives that are included in the culture series. I think Dzeet Sma is one of the better representations of that, as you read it in The Player of Games and stuff like that. So otherwise, I agree with all of that list. That's really great list there. Maybe not in that order, but there's some really cool kick-ass or badass female characters. But I would also put, actually, now that you're reading about this, I would put Thingy in there from Shards of Honor, Cordelia Naismith. Yeah, like in Barrier, in Shards of Honor and in Barrier, she's like, yep, go in here, save the day, kick some ass and stuff like that. So even though I would be willing to meet her in a dark alleyway because she's a nice person, when she needs to kick ass, she kicks ass. Which
if you're the bad guy, you don't want to meet her.
Yes, yeah. If I'm the bad guy, she's just like, yeah, and now just chop off his head. And you're like, wait, what? What about forgiveness? What about motherly love? It's like, no, head chopping off is probably where I'm going to go with this. Okay. So Modal Hoffi is another of his top five favorite science fiction movies. He goes, I'll just do this in order. Number one, Donnie Darko. Number two, The Matrix. Number three, District 9. Number four, Terminator 2. And number five, Groundhog Day. What do you think of that list?
Good
list.
I haven't watched Donnie Darko and Terminator 2. Obviously.
We should watch the Terminator 1 and 2.
It's, really?
Look, Terminator 2 is one of the best science fiction action movies.
But it has Arnold Schwarzenegger in it.
I know.
And he's just like, but he plays such ridiculous.
But it's,
and he's
it's
not
good.
Even an actor.
It's good. He's playing a robot. He's playing a robot. It's great. It's good. So
I mean, he doesn't need to act.
He doesn't. He needs to act robotic. And actually, turns out Arnold Schwarzenegger owns acting robotic. If he, like, no, it's the classic thing. Like, when you do robot now, you can go, hasta la vista, baby. You know, it's one of those things that if you're going to do an impression of a robot, one of the robots that comes into people's minds is the Terminator. It's like, give me your clothes. Yeah, I need your clothes and your motorbike. You know, all that kind of stuff. It's you know, it's what you need to do. I'll be back. Of course, he did that probably in earlier movies as well. But that's what makes it so good. And Modal Hoffi, after giving that list, he says, that's the hardest thing I've ever done. And I think it would be too difficult if someone said, top five science fiction movies, I'm not even going to share my list because I don't think I would be able to make one list. Like, how can I put Groundhog Day on the same list as District 9 or Terminator 2? Like, and The Matrix, like, I'd have to make different ones. I'd have to do, like cyberpunky science fiction quirky stuff, so I can include those, you know, Philip K. Dick kind of novels in there.
I'd
have to do, like, an alien invasion thing so I could put in, you know, District 9. Well, even that's even weird, because alien invasion District 9 isn't an alien invasion. It's an alien turning up being a, you know, a problem. So that's why District 9 is probably on his list, because it's way more complex. But, you know, I'd want to put Independence Day on there and, you know, other movies too, I'm sure. Yeah, so I'd have to do alien invasion, stuff in space, you know, like a fifth element kind of thing. You know, those movies, I wouldn't be able to make one list, because they're, even though science fiction in a novel, I can kind of appreciate these books in these ways. Movies, like a science fiction movie might not even be science fiction. Like somebody mentioned that about about Firefly. Is Firefly a science fiction series, or is it more of just a Western series set in space? You know,
it's both.
It's both. So I think it's a bit too tough, but I understand why that's the hardest thing. Here's Ryan. His list is the top five dystopian post-apocalyptic reads. And he goes, number one, 1984. Number two, The Hunger Games. Number three, The Road. Number four, Feed. And number five, Shipbreaker. I've not read The Road, Feed, or Shipbreaker. But I wanted to do that as well. Alan Smith also says, my top five dystopias. Excuse me, I'm burping. I'm drinking Pepsi here. He says, number one, Dances at the End of Time by Michael Moorcock. Number two, The Hunger Games trilogy. And then number three, 1984 by George Orwell. And number four is Barefoot in the Head. I've never, by Brian W. Aldiss. I don't really know that one. And then Blake Seven, which is a TV show, and he calls that a dystopia.
It's a dystopia.
Dystopia. But the thing is, for me, there is only one dystopia that ever matters, and that's 1984. And that's the reason is because I don't know what it is like in all these other books, but I've read The Hunger Games, and that is about people overcoming the system and winning. I've not read the second and third books in that series, but the first one, it's about bucking the system. And a lot of these things are about triumph, which is like finding meaning or overthrowing or succeeding against it. And the genius of his 1984 is that, spoiler, they don't win. At the end of the book, the dystopia is just as bad as it was, and the dystopia wins, and the people who live in it are happier. Is it one of those weird things that you just go, yeah, there's just no winning against this? And very few other dystopias I've read, when you get to the end of it, like, you feel worse.
The Day of the Triffids, is that a dystopia?
It's not dystopia at all. That's why it's called a comfy apocalypse. It's not a dystopia. Like, it could be a dystopia, but it isn't a dystopia. It's a post-apocalypse and dystopia are two different things. Whereas, I was just trying to think of other dystopias, like like that Fahrenheit 451 is a dystopia where you're not allowed to read and things like that. But in the end, he kind of wins out, you know, even though it's a weird thing, it ends. And I think dystopias which don't end or can't end or are so entrenched that there's just no way out kind of win out for me in that way. So, he also says limiting myself to five was a real strain here. He includes Asimov's Caves of Steel in there as well. And I found that pretty interesting, because when I read that, I never really thought of it as a dystopia. I just had another dystopia in my head, which was really good, and I can't remember what it is now. Anyway, number two, this is my top five list, number two, I guess, is Tom Rowe. He says top five narrators. Number one, Grover Gardner. Number two, John Lee. Number three, Peter Kenny. Number four, Jonathan Davis. And number five, Susan Bennett. I don't think I've listened to anything by Susan Bennett off the top of my head. I can't think of anything, but I should have probably searched for her name on Audible to see if I've listened to any of her books. It's a good list. I must admit, John Lee, Peter Kenny, and Jonathan Davis are three of my top five. Like, if I was making a list, we were just talking about listening to The Prefect, and you're like, John Lee is a really good narrator. These guys do really good characters and, you know, accents and things. And I was actually very lucky that when I signed up for Audible, the first book that I downloaded was Revelation Space. I was like, I've read this before. I know it's going to be good. Let's check out what it's like. And I lucked out by getting John Lee as the narrator. And I was like, wow, this is actually really good. Even though I fell asleep a lot because I was trying to read it in a way. Have you, you're looking up Susan Bennett, but you're on audible.de. So it might not come up. No, I don't see anything I recognise on that list. And then the second book that I read, or one of the next books that I read or listened to as an audio book, was The Wind-Up Girl, which was Peter Davis. Jonathan Davis. Getting Peter Kenny and Jonathan Davis mixed up. So Jonathan Davis, and that's one of my favourite ever audiobook narrators. Even now, it's just really affecting, like, just listening to it. And even Jonathan Davis says it's one of his favourite narrations that he's done. And also Peter Kenny, purely for his... the way that he brings a real lightness to the Culture series. He's like, his voice and his narration is perfect for the Culture books. And I've just listening to the Player of Games for the first time. I've read it before as a paper book, but listening to it as an ebook, it's like, well, it's Peter Kenny, let's go. I was like, of course, why not? Also, there's some other fun narrators. One that sticks out, which I think with the narrator, she did a really good job of selling the book, which is Zoo City by Lauren Bukis. I looked up before who the narrator was, Justine Airy, or Justine Ayer, or whatever her name is. And she was a South African narrating a book set in South Africa, and it was really good. The different accents, again, it was just one of those things that kind of, like, it was a book which the audiobook could have failed so spectacularly, but she did such a great job. It became one of my favorite books that I listened to last year as an audiobook. Finally, the last top five list I'll do was Isabel shared her top five alien species. She didn't put them in order, but here we go. She's got The Affront from Accession from the Culture series by Ian M. Banks, which is a good one. We'll get to that. We'll talk about that as we get to that book. The Fox and Hippe from Grass. I don't know that. The Fuzzies from Little Fuzzy are quite fun. A bit too cute, but I understand why people enjoy Little Fuzzies. The Martians from The Martian Chronicles. Also good. And then The Vogons from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And me saying that this morning when I was looking through these lists, you were like, oh yeah, The Vogons. And well, what are your bet to aliens? So I was thinking I'll go through and list some of my top five alien bad guys. And so I put The Martians from War of the Worlds, which are some of my favourite aliens. Alien from Alien, the movie. You said Solaris from Solaris. And I was like, yeah, that's great, because that is like the most alien yeah. bad guy. Kind of bad guy. Is it really bad guy?
You don't know.
Yeah, it's so alien that it doesn't even fit into the category of bad guy or bad alien or good alien. It's weird stuff. I like the Pattern Jugglers from the Revelation Space Universe, which are, again, it's one of those things that are so alien. Again, like a planet-spanning weirdness in this. It's obviously inspired a bit by Solaris, but you read that. The Triffids from Day of the Triffids. The Shrike from Hyperion. At least in the novel Hyperion, when you get into Fall of Hyperion, you realise it's not as good as you think it was going to be. But if you just go by Hyperion, shit, spoilers. The Vogons from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which I say are the bad guys, but they're kind of bad guys due to bureaucracy and...
They are unintentionally...
Yeah.
They're not intentionally bad. They're just so much into their bureaucracy that by being so, they cause... problems.
Yes, and it was the way that we were just chatting about it when we went for a walk earlier, and I was saying that they kind of represent all the worst stuff about the bureaucracy of like the Third Reich and these, you know, and these communist countries where everyone is just like, oh, I was just following orders, oh, I filled in this thing. It's like in the Holocaust, they killed, you know, millions of Jews, and they kept a list of all of the names of all of the Jews that they killed. Like, they have that, all of those records still exist. And that's the amazing thing, that they were just like, oh, well, it's okay as long as we have the form filled out in triplicate. It's okay as long as we keep track of who gave the order and all that kind of stuff. And you know, the Vogons really embody that. But my number one of all favorite bad aliens is the Primes from the Pandora's Star and Judas Unchained. Morning Light Mountain is one of my favorite. It's the introduction to that character and the introduction to that alien is one of my favorite introductions to any alien ever, because it just goes back, okay, and now here's the full evolution of this kind of thing, and here's his entire history of this thing, and it's just laid it out there, and you're reading it and you're going, wow, this is amazing, and you're like really rooting for it. You're like going, yeah, this is great, oh, he's doing really well, and it goes, and now this is the bad guy, and you're like, oh, there's the bad guy, oh, shit, oh, no, and then you're like, oh, that's what this book is about, ah, and then the rest of the series continues, like, this is about, like, a quarter or a third of the way through the first book in this two-part, like, these two-part of this same story, and as you're going through, you're just like, oh, this is great, and you're like, oh, now that's the bad guy, and you're like, ah, and you, and like, that was a point in the book where I really sat up forward, and it is a really good idea. And then there's some good aliens. Verna Vinge's Fire Upon the Deep, the dog people who share their brains, really, really interesting. And that's the reason why Fire Upon the Deep is such a great novel, because you spend so much time with these aliens who are a truly alien aliens, but in a way which you can identify with. It's like keyed in properly into these aliens, and you can really appreciate the different way that their brains work and the way that they, you know, they continue on their consciousness from one group mind to the next group mind. And what I really hated about Children of the Sky was that it's like Verna Vinge forgot that's what made that book one of the great science fiction books of the 20th century, with like top 10 of all time. And the follow-up book to that was just like, oh, the sequel, not the prequel. The sequel to that, Children of the Sky, was just like, meh. I never really cared that much about the humans in this first novel. I really wanted to see more about the mind-sharing dog people. And also a book which I remember enjoying quite a lot, which is The Crucible of Time by John Brunner. They got these tubers. I don't know if that's actually what they're called, but they're these aliens with like inflatable bones. Which, yeah, you think, what? Like, it's really good. And they're one of my favorite species, because you start off and they're like, the astronomers are going, our planet's going to pass through a cloud. Our whole solar system is heading towards this cloud. And when we get there, our entire species of alien are going to be wiped out unless we can get people off of our planet. And they're like, okay, let's do it. And then thousands of years later, they're like, shit, we're still nowhere closer, you know, because you keep reading stories like set like hundreds and then thousands and then another few hundred years after this. And you keep reading about these things. And as the society evolves, and as they like, oh, it is. And there's this really great twist when they realize that the males of the species are actually not of the same species. They're just I know it's kind of giving away a little bit, but they are like a parasite on the females.
What?
That they're actually a different species which have evolved. You know how you get snakes, which there's a kind of snake, and then there's another snake which evolves the same markings as the previous snake? One of them's poisonous and one of them isn't, and they're not even slightly related as far as snakes go. But you'd look at them and go, yeah, they're the same species, and that's what it is. And it turns out that the males of all this time, they've always considered themselves as the prime things. And then like, you start reading this new story, and they're like, oh, males... Oh, they actually look at the DNA. Like, once this whole civilization like evolves, like looking at DNA, and they're like, oh, and it turns out males aren't that handy. They're not that useful anymore. And like, the whole society just gets flipped on its head. And they're like, wait, what? Like that. And there's just loads of that kind of stuff going in. So I really enjoyed that book and really enjoyed those kind of things. And then of course you said, are robots aliens? And I'm like, no, but let's have a look at some robots. You liked R. Daniel from the Caves of Steel and that series, which is good stuff. And Marion Skell from The Culture, from Play of Games. I think it's just because we're both reading this at the moment. You're like, yeah,
drones
from The Culture are really good fun. So he can stand in as a representative of the drones from that story. Actually, all of the drones in that story, the professor drone back who stays back home,
yeah,
is like, do 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 professor, da, da, da. And you're like, yeah, he's a professor. And it's so great where people like put drinks on top of him, and he's like, duh, I'm not a table, you know. And it's just the way that people interact with.
He's not a professor.
No, what is he?
He's just like an old guy, like an old.
Yeah, but he's like a friend of Gurgay.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh is. No, he's not the professor, isn't he? No, there's the other character's the professor, yeah, but he's always hanging out with the other academics, you know, doing games. Playing and stuff. Marvin from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and
just brilliant.
Yeah, really good fun. R2-D2, which he's not in, it's not science fiction novels, but you might as well,
fun character.
Might as well put him in. And there was I also made another little title, top five, or the idea of having top five artificial intelligences. And there's lots of stuff that I could put in here, but I think I'll save this top five list for maybe a different podcast. I was thinking of doing like top fives like at the end of other podcasts, like picking out something that's mentioned in that book and then using it as a springboard for top fives. That's what we were saying, if, you know, when we went for the walk, like, should I do more top fives in the future? I wouldn't mind sharing some of the top five artificial intelligences.
Inventions.
Yeah, top five inventions. Top five Philip K. Dick adaptations as movies, you know. Top five this. Top five, what was the other ones? Like, top five science fiction worlds, like in movies. Or top five, you know, that kind of thing. Like, it's not like a series. It's like, if you wanted to live in a world, which would be your best world, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe do that. I just wanted to mention Behemoth from Behemoth, the book. by Peter Watts. It's probably my favorite artificial intelligence because it may or may not even be self-aware. And that's what he also goes into quite a lot of that in Blindsight. You know, you get these self-aware things. It's like, and then the Terminator, in Terminator, and then Skynet became self-aware at this date in 1997 or 2007. Or this is the day that it became self-aware. And what I really like about Peter Watts is like, he's like, yeah, self-awareness, probably overrated, you know. Like, Google is an artificial intelligence. Just because it's not self-aware doesn't mean that it can't be awesome already. Anyway.
We're supposed to be self-aware as well.
Meant to be self-aware, but even in Blindsight, like, the whole book is about, yeah, but what, like, vampires, are vampires self-aware? You know, and it's like, we have space vampires, do we? Yeah, we do. Okay, space vampires. Is self-awareness, like, consciousness, like conscious thought about yourself,
does it help
or not? Because yeah. Cockroaches have got by quite well in the past million, yeah. And that's what I really love about Peter Watts, is like, he's got these ideas where and that's why Blindsight is listed in this top 25 or top 50 science fiction books of all time, because you just read it and you just go, okay, Peter Watts, he should go in my breaking my brain kind of situation there. So Behemoth from Maelstrom, or is it no, it's Maelstrom. Which one? One of them is a biological thing, and one of them is a computer thing. No, I think it's the Maelstrom from Maelstrom or Behemoth. Ah, fuck it. I know, one of those things. Yeah, I think Behemoth is the disease, is the thing that eats sodium or something. Anyway, that brings an end to it. So hopefully you've enjoyed this podcast. The next episode that we're going to do, we're going to talk a little bit about the Culture series. Look, an hour and 35 minutes we've gone in here. Fuck it. It's episode number 200.
Yeah, in the other one, we talked a lot longer.
Yeah, okay. That's no problem at all. So I hope you enjoyed this. Email me, luke@juggler.net. You can also go to the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com and share your top fives if you want to share any top fives. And I will, and if you give a good top five, I think I will go through in some later science fiction book review podcast episodes and sort of pick out some of my favorite top fives from that list, share them, and also share my own top five of the same thing or comment on them. I think that'll be a fun little thing. I remember I used to listen to a podcast called Film Spotting, and they always did a top five segment blatantly stolen from High Fidelity, the movie High Fidelity, which is a good movie. And they're always saying top five albums, top five, you know, side one, track one kind of things, and top five this and top five that. So yeah, I think top five is are a good way into a subject and gets you thinking about it as well. So I'll share some of them in the future. Did I say email me? You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge. Or you can become my friends on goodreads.com, which is really great, because then I can see, like, if I've read a book, I can easily look up people, like, what you think of the book too, which is really great. Or you can follow or become Juliana's friend on goodreads.com. How many friends do you have now of SFBLP listeners?
Quite a lot.
Quite a few. Click on your face on there. Anyway, so you can become Juliana. You can find her by looking for Juliana.
18 friends.
19 friends. Look at that. Some good stuff there. Yeah, you can check out my blog, which is at lukeburge.com and other stuff. Otherwise, that's it. Say goodbye, Juliana.
Goodbye.
Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.